welcome back to The Horrors.
Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Shay.
We're here with something a little different today.
Yeah, not a typical horror movie.
No, not by any means, although it was requested by a couple people. And Shay and I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff to talk about here, and that's what we're here to do.
It's very thrilling and very sexy.
So sexy. It's technically a horror thriller, although the majority of the movie plays out like something else. So if you're unfamiliar with this film, which at this point, I doubt you're unfamiliar with this film, it has taken the internet by storm. Buckle your seatbelts and don't get too comfortable because there are some plot twists coming your way.
We are talking about Saltburn.
Yes. So everybody already knows that Barry Keoghan plays Oliver Quick and Jacob Elordi plays Felix Catton. We're going to be talking a lot about those two leading figures. I also want to introduce some of the important ladies that we will be meeting in this film. First, we have Rosamund Pike as Lady Elsbeth Catton, Felix's mother. Pike is an English actress, arguably most well-known for her role in 2014's Gone Girl, although I know her fondly from 2020's iconic I Care a Lot, and most importantly, 2005's Pride and Prejudice, where she played Jane Bennett.
Gone Girl, she was wild in Gone Girl, though.
I have never seen that movie.
Oh, I think you'd eat it up.
I think I would devour
it. I think you'd love it.
Next, we have Alison Oliver as Venetia Catton, Felix's sister. She is an Irish actress, arguably most well-known for her debut role as Frances in the miniseries Conversations with Friends. And she was named in Variety's 10 Actors to Watch in 2023. So she's really up and coming right now, and I'm sure we are going to see more of her. And finally, we have Carey Mulligan as Poor Dear Pamela, which her name is Pamela, but she is credited on Wikipedia as Poor Dear Pamela, which I love. She is an English actress. She is in a ton of amazing things. Recently, she was just in the biopic Maestro, and I know her fondly as Kitty Bennett in, you guessed it, 2005's Pride and Prejudice. Getting into some pre-plot stuff, this film was directed and written by Emerald Fennell. You may know Fennell as the director and writer of A Promising Young Woman, which Carey Mulligan also stars in. Or maybe for her most recent on-screen appearance as pregnant Midge in the Barbie movie.
I'm seeing so much about A Promising Young Woman. I mean, that had a really big splash when it first came out, but I'm seeing a lot of people still talking about it. I know my point of it shouldn't be that Bo Burnham's in it, and that's like what my thought process is. But I was just seeing like a character breakdown of his character and how it has to do with like women's safety on TikTok, like literally this morning. So maybe that goes on our list soon.
I was wondering that because I always heard about that movie in terms of being a thriller, but It might have elements that we could totally talk about.
I have had people bring it up to me before, So maybe it's something we'll explore.
Some other trivia, the actual place used for the Saltburn estate is Drayton House in Lowick, UK. It was built around the year 1300.
Whoa.
So this is an old-ass house. Rosamund Pike lived in the Saltburn house while the filming took place. That's my kind of method acting. And finally, Emerald Fennell stated that she considers Saltburn to be a vampire movie, even though the story does not have supernatural elements. And we'll explore some of those themes later, but I wanted to say that now just to, I don't know, give you something to think about as we move through the plot.
All right, so we open with images of cigarettes and lighters, and then we have this monologue that is being delivered by Oliver, who is our principal character. And this is dialogue that will be brought up again throughout the film. It kind of bookends the film. But he goes on to say, I wasn't in love with him. Everyone thought I was. I loved him, of course. It was impossible not to love Felix, and that was part of the problem. Everyone loved him. Everyone wanted to be around him. It exhausted him. People just wouldn't leave him alone, especially the girls. It was embarrassing, really, the way people fawned over him. I think, honestly, that's why he liked me so much. I protected him. I was honest with him. I understood him. I loved him. I loved him. I loved him. But was I in love with him? And then the scene transitions to images of Oliver, who is Barry Keoghan, walking through a college campus with regal music with a banner that says, Welcome, Class of 2006.
It's not only regal music, it's Zadok the Priest, or Zadok, Zadok, Zadok the Priest, and that's the coronation song for, like, royal people in England.
Oh, I didn't know. You would know.
I would. But they did change the lyrics to Oliver Quick. They like added his name in there.
Oh, really?
Yes. You can hardly tell because it's like a choral song. And sometimes I think enunciation gets a little bit lost sometimes when you have an ensemble singing. But nevertheless, I think it's foreshadowing to the important role he ends up playing. So we are on Oxford University's campus in late 2006. We have arrived. We are following Oliver Quick, who is a student just arriving on campus. It seems to be his freshman year. And we see him see Felix, Jacob Elordi's character, in the quad or the courtyard. I was like, what do British people call like the quad? Is it the courtyard? I don't know. But we see Oliver see Felix. He gets into his dorm room, later arrives for dinner, and he sits across from a peer named Michael. And Michael is a math genius. He aggressively asks Oliver to ask him a sum. He apparently can add things really quickly without help of any calculators, just using his own big brain. And we quickly get the sense that Oliver and Michael are outsiders. And Michael is an important character in helping Oliver understand that. You know, Oliver is saying, oh, it's just the first day. I haven't really met anybody yet. And Michael's like, everybody has already met each other and we are already on the outside. So they kind of form an alliance, which made me laugh because one time I got advice from a high school teacher that the first friends you make in college are like survival friends.
Right.
Until you actually meet your real friends that you can build bonds with. So these two very much have like a survival friendship mentality.
December 6th, 2013.
You are a real friend, obviously, but we did not meet right away. You were not my survival friend.
No, we weren't survival friends. Your marching band friends were survival friends.
Yes, I would say all but one of them.
Yes.
But yes, the rest of them were definitely survival friends. Not that I didn't enjoy my time with them. I think we all knew what we needed from each other, and that's okay. Friends for different reasons.
Always. I love friends for different reasons. So later we see Oliver sitting with a professor who is asking him about himself. We learn that Oliver is from a town called Prescott, which based on the reaction from the professor seems to be a lower income area based on the other students that might be attending Oxford. Oliver reveals that he did the whole reading list and the professor seems like, why the hell would you do that? But it's again proving that Oliver might be feeling like he has a chip on his shoulder, wants to earn his place in this more prestigious space or university.
In this meeting, another student arrives late. It seems like maybe this teacher is their advisor, or maybe this is some kind of seminar situation. They're meeting about some creative writing or some writing in general that they're working on. And this is where we meet Farley Start. He comes into the meeting 20 minutes late, and the professor, noting Farley's last name, Start, asks if he knows Federica Start, and Farley responds, that's my mother, formerly known as Federica Catton. I'll tell her you said hi. And the professor's like, oh no, don't do that. I don't actually know her. I saw her a lot when we went to school together. And I think that this is an important moment to see the difference between how Oliver is approaching his coursework versus Farley, who is from this upper class family. It seems like he's in a legacy family. He has people in his life that have already gone to Oxford. He's following in that path, whereas Oliver is like first generation Oxford student, scholarship student, trying to prove his place. I also noted the teacher's seemingly humorous dialogue about sort of being an observer might sow some seeds for the character development we see from Oliver.
Later, Oliver finds Michael in the library. Michael's still very much trying to be friends with Oliver, even though Oliver's trying to keep his distance. And he ends up telling Oliver about a Christmas party they were NFI'd, not fucking invited to.
And if you haven't noticed, it's a Christmas party, so time is elapsing at a quick pace.
We see that Oliver tries to attend the party, but he ends up just playing pool alone as he watches the rest of his peers make friends with each other. So he's still very much feeling alone in this situation.
We have another jump forward in time. We can see that the greenery has returned to the trees. It is springtime. And Oliver happens upon Felix sitting next to a tree. His bicycle has gotten a flat tire and he's kind of shit out of luck on how he's going to get to class.
It's interesting too, because in this conversation, Oliver is mirroring Felix's behavior. Like when Felix sighs, Oliver sighs. There's a lot of like mirroring of their postures and mirroring of their cadences of voices.
Wait, I did not notice that, but remind me to bring that up later because that fits into some of the themes we have going.
Exactly. So this is just the very beginning of, obviously, we've noticed Oliver noticing Felix from afar. And we've said this in other movies before, but it's the idea of when you're at the bottom of like the feeding pool, you always know who's above you. Like, you always know who's more popular than you, but people who are at a certain level don't always know who's below them. So this is, again, a stark example of him having an awareness of Felix, but Felix not even knowing who Oliver is. And that is confirmed when they're talking about the broken bike. Oliver's like, yeah, I can just ride it back to the college. We go to the same college. And Felix is like, really? So like, he didn't even have like an awareness of Oliver prior to this point. Oliver ends up offering Felix his bike so that he can get to his tutoring session on time, and resists at first, but eventually agrees to take his working bike while Oliver takes the broken bike back to campus. He kisses Oliver on the forehead and is like, I love you, I love you, I love you, and leaves Oliver to walk the broken bike back to campus while he makes his tutoring on time.
Later that night, Oliver is at the bar with Michael, his survival friend, when Felix sees him from the other side of the room sitting at a big table with his friends and flags Oliver over. Oliver promptly ditches Michael, who unfortunately had gone to the bathroom to find when he came back that Oliver was no longer interested in him, and Oliver sits with Felix and his friends. The night goes on, there's drinking, there's laughing. People seem a little bit annoyed at Oliver's presence at the table, but they're also drunk and happy and generally accepting. And it's Oliver's turn now to buy a round of drinks. Felix knows that it's going to cost a lot. I mean, if you're buying drinks for like 8 people at a table, that's going to cost a ton. Oliver is like determined to prove his place, so he tries to go to the bar and barter with the bartender to let him pay the next day because he didn't bring enough cash. But Felix, perceiving that Oliver might not be able to pay, gives him the money, acting like he just found it on the floor and it was Oliver's all along. So we can see Felix is being established as like a sympathetic person, maybe more observant, you know, somebody who might care about Oliver. And despite the differences his friends seem to scoff at, he is somebody that sees a lot of good qualities in Oliver and is really grateful for the kindness that Oliver had showed him earlier.
Meanwhile, we see Farley is a member of this group because Farley and Felix are cousins, right?
Yes, I think that Farley's mother is Felix's father's sister. Because remember Federica Catton?
Yes.
And Felix Catton. So Federica married somebody else. So I think that Farley's mother is Felix's aunt.
Yes, yes. But Farley is jealous of Felix and Oliver's budding friendship because we start to see montages of Oliver joining this group out for more nights at the bar. We also see Felix asking Oliver about himself, where Oliver reveals he has no siblings, he doesn't see his parents much due to their mental health and addiction problems, and Felix seems to be very kind and comforting receiving this information. Later, we see Michael confronting Oliver again in the library, saying like, you look different, and goes on to say, Felix will get bored of you, you bootlicker. Telling him that like the place that you're feeling right now is temporary. You are not the person that you feel as though you are in this moment. And this is the last time we see Michael. So I think that this is an interesting last appearance of this character to kind of remind Oliver who he is. Like, even though he is keeping the company of people that are more elevated than him, that doesn't make him elevated himself.
And that seems to immediately come into play when later Oliver hears Felix and his situationship Annabelle talking about him in the courtyard. Annabelle doesn't like sitting near Oliver. She says he's a scholarship boy who gets his clothes secondhand. Felix says that's harsh. But again, Oliver overhears this conversation, which seems to confirm what Michael has said, insinuating that somehow Oliver is always going to be on the outside. He's going to be somebody discarded in the end. The next day, we see Felix and Oliver spending time together, but Felix seems a little bit annoyed with Oliver. There's some dialogue that Oliver has about Felix's messy room. He offers to clean it up, but then Felix gets annoyed and just starts picking up the trash instead of Oliver. And we can sense that there's some tension. So Oliver ends up leaving, but Felix says they might go to the bar tonight and he'll let him know if they go. Oliver never gets a text message, so he goes to the bar himself and sees that Felix is there with all of his friends and, of course, hasn't let him know that that's where they ended up. So Oliver goes home and runs into Annabelle, the college student we had just seen in the courtyard with Felix. She's waiting outside of Felix's room, but Oliver informs her Felix is at the pub. He's not here. So then Annabelle asks Oliver if he has any alcohol. So then they start drinking and making out. And then Annabelle is like, do you think Felix will be jealous? And Oliver responds, honestly, I don't even think it will register. And this pisses Annabelle off. We can see that she was trying to make Felix jealous, and this response does not validate her ego whatsoever. So she leaves in a huff, and then Oliver is left alone.
And this is just establishing that Felix is a very charismatic presence. And we don't see Felix necessarily taking this for granted, which I think is very interesting. He's just a very magnetic person. It just seems as though like a lot of people are attracted to him and like his attention. And it's like that beginning monologue stated, like he just gets overwhelmed with the amount of people that want to be around him. And when it gets to a point where he's almost desired too much, he dips out. Which isn't to say that he's a flawless character, but it's just to say that I think everyone can see a lot of qualities in him that they want for themselves. And that, you know, when you're their number one person or you're his person of the week, you feel very special. And then when you're discarded, it hurts a lot more than it affects him.
That is such a good point, because it doesn't feel malicious.
No, it really doesn't.
It just feels kind of natural, like college communication. Plus, I mean, texting, it wasn't as easy back then. You had T9 texting.
Mm-hmm. So the next morning, we see that there's vomit on Oliver's mirror. He's waking up with a hangover, and he receives a phone call from his mother. Later, we see Oliver knocking on Felix's door, crying. And when he invites him in and they have a conversation, Oliver tells Felix that his father passed away and his mother isn't coping very well. Felix tries to urge him to go home, miss exams, but Oliver says that school is all he has. He can't miss the exams. This is the only way out of his situation. And this sympathetic situation seems to reinvigorate Oliver's presence back into Felix's everyday life. Later, we see students at, is it a party or graduation, an end of year celebration?
So I actually have a piece of during the plot trivia for this.
Yes.
So this is called the trashing scene. So after Oliver finishes his exams, he comes outside with all of his other peers who have completed the exams, and people are waiting at the bottom of the steps of the building, throwing things at them like papers and confetti and screaming and celebrating. And according to IMDb, this is an accurate representation of a genuine Oxford ritual known as trashing, in which students celebrate the end of exams by ambushing their friends with these items when they leave the exam hall. So it's a tradition that was around since the 1970s and was still prominent during 2006 when this movie was set, but it has since been deemed more controversial because of like just throwing trash and the amount of waste. People don't do it like they used to.
So during this celebration, we see Farley making fun of Oliver's rental tux, telling him he's almost passing as a real human boy, which is interesting because we hear this dialogue coming from Farley a lot throughout the movie of how Oliver's like not a human being, or he's like not a real boy, very Pinocchio-esque. Like he's a fraud. He's not the real thing. He's fake. He's a puppet. And we have imagery of puppets later on in the movie. However, Felix ends up finding Oliver and takes him to a bridge and tells him how his family has a tradition of when somebody passes away, they write the family member's name on a stone and throw it into the water as a way to honor them. And he had written a stone for Oliver's father. So this is a very thoughtful gesture, a way of kind of inviting Oliver in on his family almost, which I think is the first step of actually doing that. He invites Oliver to, you know, say a few words about his father, tell a story, but Oliver ends up just taking the stone, thanking Felix, and just throws it into the river, but misses the water.
Which is like, how do you miss that?
But I think it's proving some dishonesty, or it's the ritual trying to make itself authentic. And we do see that it is authentic later with some of the things that happen in the movie. But I think this is the first sign that Oliver might not be as honest as we are taking him to be.
And in this scene, Felix invites Oliver to spend the summer with his family at their house, Saltburn, which is really more like an estate. Cut to Saltburn. We have arrived. It's this huge, beautiful house with these expansive gardens and lawns, and it's absolutely stunning. Felix meets Oliver at the door and gets a quick tour of the house. There's the green room, the blue room, etc., which I noted kind of reminds me of the Edgar Allan Poe story, Mask of the Red Death.
Mm-hmm.
Ollie meets Felix's eccentric parents, Sir James and Lady Elsbeth, Felix's sister, Venetia, and Elsbeth's friend, Pamela. And also Farley is there.
We are getting the sense that these people are fake. Because while Oliver is readying himself to join the rest of the family in their living room of sorts, he stands outside of the room listening to them speak for a little bit, where they hear them talking about him in a very disparaging way about how his parents are addicts and he's just such a sympathy case, and how Felix kind of just always brings around these lost dogs. Not speaking about Oliver's situation with sympathy, but more so with disgust. Venetia isn't really involved, but is looking at Oliver very curiously, very sensually, as she smokes her cigarette. So there's some budding interest there. As Oliver enters, Elsbeth compliments Oliver, saying, "Oh, you're so adorable. I fear ugliness. I was afraid." Like, she gets very, I don't know. And there's also like a scene of how Felix tells Oliver that she doesn't like stubble and needs a clean shaven face.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, is this a rich people thing or is this a youth thing? Like, I don't know.
I think it's really underscoring Elsbeth's characterization as somebody who's really consumed with the idea of beauty. Mm-hmm. She is afraid of ugliness. She doesn't want to see stubble on anybody's face, to the point where Felix has to warn Oliver to shave before meeting her. Maybe it sows like a level of vapidness in her character, or like really sets her apart as this affluent woman who lives in this rich house. She's sort of like safe and guarded from all of the ugliness of the world because of her privilege. So if anything, I think it really helps underscore that in sort of like more of a humorous way, because mm-hmm. her dialogue is so, it sounds so absurd and so exaggerated to us. But again, solidifies how this family is very different from a family that Oliver says he's grown up with.
Later, they're at dinner. They all have to dress very prim and proper for dinner. So Felix ends up lending Oliver a jacket. Again, just showing the power dynamic between the two. Pamela ends up telling Oliver about her ex who stole all of her money. And we see that Oliver is very good at playing along and listening and like making the person that is next to him feel heard in that situation. And we see this with Michael, obviously, earlier in the movie, but he's very good at playing along. Meanwhile, the rest of the family is very pointedly encouraging Pamela to move out, which is making Oliver feel bad. Again, are just starting to see, while this family appears to be very accommodating by letting him stay there, once there's like a new person to fixate on, they're very ready to discard the extra attention. That night, Oliver joins Venetia outside for a smoke. She is outside in like a nightgown, so he brings a blanket out and gives it to her. She notes that it's a full moon, so they're all about to lose their minds. He notes, "You must be cold," but she says, "No, we're all cold-blooded." I see why Felix likes you so much. You're so real. And that she might even like him more than last year's one.
It's a pattern.
Obviously, this could be something that is proving Felix's intentions, where he really finds himself to be generous, where he finds a peer or a friend and almost acts as if Saltburn is a form of charity, where he is being like, "Oh, you know, you're down on your luck. You're not as privileged as I am. Let me give you this luxurious experience that's once in your life." Instead of maybe approaching it from like a justice-oriented lens, where it's like, let me help you get on your feet and let me help you get out of this situation. But it seems as though it is validating that there is truth to the idea that Felix has these fixations where he focuses on people for a short amount of time and then discards them instead of truly helping them get to a point where they can operate independently. So I think Venetia's presence is always that reminder that she actually knows who Felix is, because Felix is her brother, versus who Oliver knows Felix to be in the short few months that they've actually known each other. So the next morning, Oliver's woken up for breakfast by a maid, and he comes down to breakfast to see that there is an array of food laid out for him, very much buffet style, anything you could ever want. And the only thing that he would have to order is how he likes his eggs. So he asks for, I forget exactly what he asks for, but he asks for a certain style of egg. And when he receives it, he looks at it quizzically, and Felix is like, "What's wrong?" And he's like, "You know, I can't really eat eggs that are very runny. It upsets my stomach. Can I have them different?" We see that everyone's initially taken back by the poor kid asking for somebody to redo things for him. But the butler ends up begrudgingly taking it back and bringing him new eggs. And I think this is the first time that we see Oliver kind of pushing the boundaries of his stay at Saltburn, where he wants to do something that's pretty minute and see, will his behavior or will his defiance be accepted? And it is. Like, the butler ends up remaking his eggs. And I don't know enough about eggs to know if the eggs were actually made to his liking. Like, I think that would be significant if the eggs that he actually asked for were made the way he asked for. And then he's like, actually, I don't like these, and sent them back when they were as he asked.
I think they were. I think he asked for like a, it wasn't like an over easy egg, but it was like a fried situation. When he was served his eggs, they looked right to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was a test. I think later, based on who we know Oliver to be as a character, it was a way to test the waters of, is this kind of behavior allowed? And it was. Later, Oliver, there's more montages.
I love the montages.
Oh, talk about the montage.
Well, it's just like an amazing summer montage to like an MGMT song. And it's like, oh my God, like this is amazing. Like literally the soundtrack to this movie.
Yes.
It's so good. And also, like, all they do all day is lounge by. Well, first of all, there's a pool on the estate, and there's also like a pond for swimming on the estate. And then there's all this grass, and then, you know, they're naked in the grass fields, just tanning in the sun. It's just absolute ideal summer shenanigans. And so we get the sense that more time has passed and Oliver is enjoying himself with the Cattons at the Saltburn estate.
We also see Oliver studying a hedge maze, which I was like, okay, Shining. There is a hedge maze on the estate. We see him studying this maze, and Duncan, the butler, who seems to be the most uneasy of Oliver, kind of like rushes him out of this room as if like he doesn't have access to this information. And Oliver ends up leaving after studying the hedge maze's design. And we also see Oliver sucking up to Felix's father with fake knowledge that we see that he's reading on his own time, but he's acting like he knows all about in the present. Something about these plates or this artifact that Felix's father keeps around in the house, but we see as he's speaking about it, Oliver reading about it late at night because he wants to impress him. So I don't know if it's fake. I don't know if it's respectful. It's played like it could be either. And we see that there's continual flirtation between Venetia and Oliver. So this dynamic is building. And now we come to one of three pivotal scenes that TikTok loves to talk about.
This is the bathtub scene. Mm-hmm. Something we haven't established is that the room Oliver is staying in shares a bathroom with Felix's room. What do they call that? Jack and Jill bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's that sort of situation. So Oliver is in his room one night and he can hear a soft sort of moaning from the bathroom. And as he peers through the cracked door, he can see Felix in the bathtub masturbating. So Felix finishes his tub and his cum.
His Jack and his Jill.
Jack and his Jill, and sets the bathtub to drain, and then presumably goes into his room. And then we see Oliver come into the bathroom. And at first, I had heard about the scene before I watched the movie. And at first, I was like, okay, whatever. Because Oliver just puts his face against the bottom of the tub now that the water has almost gone and starts sucking up the water, which is, oh wow, very sexual. He is consuming this cummy water. But then he brings his mouth closer to the drain and like slurps water up from the drain. You would not catch me with my mouth on a drain. I am actively afraid of drains. Like, this scene was crazy to me.
Yeah, I remember when you first spoke to me about it, your main hang up was that
The drain. I was like, okay, whatever, the other stuff. And then I was like, this drain, you're going to put your mouth on this drain? How clean is that?
But then once you said that, I remember saying, well, what other circular orifice is also a little dirty that people like to put their mouth on sometimes in sexual situations?
You know, it's not often on this podcast where we get to talk about butt stuff.
Yeah, we don't.
But you're so right in this moment. I definitely think that has to be on purpose.
It's a rim job.
Especially because we have these two men with this sexual energy. It's like palpable. And it's also scandalous because we also know Oliver has that tension with Venetia, Felix's sister.
Yeah. And now he's consumed the result of that sexual energy, even though the sexual energy obviously isn't focused on Oliver at this time. But Oliver has a lot of admiration for Felix that we don't know if it is sexual, if it is romantic, if it is obsessive, if it is platonic, whatever it is, right? But there is some level of intimacy that's palpable between the two of them.
So this might be where some of that vampire stuff starts coming into play. We see consuming these bodily fluids. But also, I think it's interesting what you just said about we don't really know what Oliver is feeling for Felix. It could be, I don't know, is it romantic? Is it obsessive? Is it the desire to be in Felix's place, right? There's a lot of complexities here.
Later, we see Oliver and Elspeth hanging out by the pool. Elizabeth is casually slut-shaming Venetia. I don't know how this comes up, but just about how... I think Elizabeth is noticing that Venetia is taking an interest in Oliver. Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth goes on to say, honestly, if she just found the right boy or girl, I don't care anything. I was a lesbian for a little while, you know, but it was all just too wet for me in the end. Men are so lovely and dry. And I was laughing my ass off. I thought that was so funny. But then we see Oliver kind of making moves on Elizabeth, like flirting with her.
Yeah. So he just says, you're so fucking beautiful. Which, this is the first moment in the movie where I picked up on vibes of manipulation. Mm-hmm. Because we know that Elizabeth has been established as a character who loves beautiful things. And for Oliver to say point blank, you are so fucking beautiful, like that is obviously like such a huge ego stroke for her. And we can see that that is helping to kind of ingratiate himself with her even more. Like to be on her good side and have her as an ally in this family.
And she's receptive to it.
100%.
So then we learn that Pamela was peeled away one morning. The family had seemed to lose sympathy for her. They're talking shit on her. And Oliver ends up playing coy, suggesting that Pamela wasn't always telling the truth. And Elizabeth is biting at this and gets her to admit that there was something sinister about Pamela and calls Oliver very perceptive. But it's showing that Oliver has manipulation skills too. Like we see him in the beginning being this very innocent presence or somebody that is just here to benefit from this situation. And we kind of see him adjust his approach because in the beginning, he's very kind to Pamela. He's entertaining the stories about her ex-husband and trying to make her feel welcome because he thinks that kindness and gratitude is what's going to ingratiate himself into this space. However, once he sees that the talking shit is actually what these people respect more, he's in.
I'm wondering if in the beginning he really thought, like we know that Oliver admires this estate. He admires Felix to some degree. Was his first tactic to really be a part of this family genuinely being kind and appreciative? Mm-hmm. And then did he actually realize, like you said, that that wasn't going to work?
I think that's made more obvious later.
Yeah.
Because we're meant to trust Oliver. Like, we think that he is a good scholarship kid, but I think those different things that he's told us about himself or that we assume to be true to this point, that he came up on rough times, he's a scholarship boy, he doesn't have a lot of money, automatically makes us pity him and automatically makes us assume that he is of finer moral character than somebody like Felix is. However, we are being presented with Felix that he actually might have a better moral character despite his wealth, which mm-hmm. is something that we, especially with the presence of his family, aren't to assume can exist at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we're waiting for the other shoe to drop with Felix the entire time, but we don't know that it actually ever does. He might just be a good person.
Speaking of good versus bad person and controversial decisions, that night, mm-hmm. Oliver sees Venetia wandering in the gardens at nighttime again. He has seen her doing this before. He goes out to meet her one time before and gives her a blanket. This time he goes out and talks to her even more. Is she sitting on like a bench?
She's sitting on a stairwell that's right under his window.
Right. So he approaches her and they begin talking. And then he seductively kneels in front of her and says, I could just eat you. Obviously, we have some sexual tension going on right now. And Venetia says, it's not a good time, which is insinuating that she's on her period. And Oliver replies, lucky for you, I'm a vampire.
I wrote, this is giving how long have you been 17? A while. From Twilight. Oh. I was talking to a friend about this scene and how collectively this scene seemed to upset so many straight people.
Why?
Vanilla? I don't know. Like, this seems to be like the most kinky thing that some people have ever seen or like, the most vile thing that some people have ever seen, right? Uh-huh. Like this idea that someone can go down on somebody while they have their period. And that's like the most like clutching their pearls type of situation to the point where my friend and I were discussing, oh my God, like that scene was so cringe. Like what the fuck? But I had mentioned something to the degree of, no, I think that this is going to be a lot of girls intro kind of acting like how, and I say this because I know there's a little bit of controversy to it, how 50 Shades of Grey was kind of like an intro course to spicy time for mm-hmm. some people. Not to say that movie was the most adequate representation, because I know for a lot of people it was problematic because it wasn't representing like the scene in the best way. I said, I feel like this is so special because I feel like so many women are sending this scene to their boyfriends who think that doggy is spicy.
Oh my right? God.
He's also having this very assertive presence where he, you know, is calling her beautiful, but he is also noticing that she isn't eating.
Oh, yes, because Elsbeth brings that up to him. So when she casually slut shames Venetia, she also brings up that Venetia has an eating disorder.
Right.
So Oliver has absorbed that information and brings it into the scene.
Yes. He tells Venetia, you're going to eat the next day and stay at the table until your plate is clean. Does she understand? Like, very commanding, very assertive. Which, I mean, I guess could be seen as sexy, could be seen as manipulative, could be seen as controlling, but I think that dynamic of I'm telling you what to do in this spicy situation is hot to a lot of people. Absolutely, that's fine. Maybe not addressing an eating disorder that way is the most productive way, but that's for another discussion. Whatever.
It reminds me of the scene from Fleabag when Fleabag is telling her therapist how, like, she wants somebody to tell her what to do.
Right. He's licking his fingers that have blood all over them, sticks his fingers in her mouth, runs blood down her neck, over her chest, is kissing her, like lapping up the blood on her chin and neck. It's cool. Like, it is
like a cool scene. Yeah.
I think visually it's very interesting. I also think at this point it's interesting that Oliver has consumed a lot of different bodily fluids of the Catton family from different people at this point, where if this is a vampire movie, I'm sure that's going to be talked about. But we see that Farley is watching from the window as all of this happens and mutters that Oliver is a stupid little boy.
Mm-hmm. So the next morning, Venetia is eating a big bowl of cereal as Oliver eats his croissant. Well, actually, he doesn't eat his croissant. He passes it across the table to her, and she eats that too. This also reminded me of Rose the Hat. You know how Rose the Hat is able to just tell people what to do when they do it? That is what Oliver was reminding me of here, just with that, again, like you said, what is it? Manipulation, charisma, I don't know, but it's happening. Then the rest of the family is sitting by, and they all brainstorm what they want to do for Oliver's upcoming birthday party. And Lord Catton says they should have a fancy dress party, which is in England a way to say like a costume party. So that's what they decide they're going to do for Oliver's upcoming party. And the theme is going to be A Midsummer Night's Dream.
But Felix seems to be very standoffish during this conversation, which I think leads to the idea that Farley told Felix what he saw the previous night. So later, Oliver finds Felix at the poolside, and Felix really isn't acknowledging Oliver or talking to him. And eventually, Felix says that he isn't annoyed, that it's just bad form as all. And Oliver lies and says, Venetia came on to him and Farley exaggerated what he saw. Oliver thought he was being kind, not bringing it up to Felix as to not embarrass Venetia, but he is claiming that he denied Venetia, like gently, because he knows he's staying there, he doesn't want to embarrass anybody. Felix reveals that another friend of his that stayed a previous summer developed a thing for Venetia and ended up ruining their friendship. I think this is a hint to Oliver that maybe he thought that getting with Venetia might be a way into the family that would be a way of approval. And now he's learning that that's not the way of approval. So he's going to start backing off and just assuming that they didn't hook up.
That night, we see Venetia waiting under Oliver's window again, but Oliver does not go outside. Oliver also happens to hear Felix and Farley arguing about money. So it sounds like Farley is asking for his mother to get more money from the Catton family, but Felix is denying that request, and we can see that there's tension there between them. And that maybe Farley is obviously supported by the Cattons, but it seems like there's some tension there, or maybe resentment that Farley has to ask for that money. But on Felix's end, why is Farley asking? His mother is well supported, so we can see that tension.
And he implies that it has to do with race because Farley is black.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Farley's mother married a black man. And I think that has something to do with the outward appearances of the Catton family. And while the Catton family doesn't outwardly treat it like it's a race thing, it very much is being perceived that way. I think it's also implied that because Farley's family lives in the United States, that Farley's mother like married outside of her class, like married down in a way. So I think Felix is feeling almost like, well, your mother chose not to stay within our class or stay within the family or marry within our lifestyle. And that's not my problem.
That night at dinner, it seems like the Cattons have several guests over. There's a large table set. Everyone sits down to dinner. On one side of Oliver is a random woman that he speaks to temporarily, but on the other side is Venetia, and she is frustrated. She was left hanging the night before, sitting on those steps, and she calls Oliver a toy that Felix doesn't want to play with anymore. So again, mimicking that dialogue that we heard from Michael in the beginning of the movie, this idea that Oliver is somebody who will eventually be discarded by Felix. And this time, I feel like it's more personal because it's coming from Venetia, who actually knows Felix. That night, Oliver and Farley break away from the party and chat about some of the king's portraits in the art gallery. And they decide to play Fuck, Marry, Kill, Richard III, Henry VII, or Henry VIII, which is like, I want to play this game.
It sounds like your party game.
I was like, wait, this is amazing. As Farley is saying who he would fuck, Oliver responds, or you could fuck me. So, okay, oh my. This moment came out of left field for me. I was not anticipating seeing this kind of energy between these two characters. And it seems like it also maybe slightly takes Farley off guard too. But we can see Ollie starting to play allies with Farley. He mentions, like, if you ever want me to say anything to Felix about what I heard you talking to him about, I could put in a good word for you. I can help you. And it looks like Farley is listening and complying with this information. And he's like, yeah, okay, cool, thanks. But once they get back into the party room where there's karaoke going on, Farley cues a song for Oliver that's basically about taking handouts. Like, one of the lyrics is, I love you, you pay my rent. I'm unfamiliar with the song.
I'm unfamiliar with the song too, but it's a song about being poor. And he's like, oh, this song's for Oliver. And Oliver ends up being like, hey, Farley, you sing the second half of this. This is about you too.
Yeah.
And so it's showing that tension. And Farley's gay. And we've seen that Farley has some physical attraction to Oliver very slightly previous, like in that summer montage. They're all naked at one point, and we see that Farley like looks at Oliver's dick and is like, good for you.
Begrudgingly, good for you.
Like, good for you. Even with like the tux scene where it's like, wow, you dress up really nice. You almost look like a real human boy. So it's like, it's both teasing, but at the same time, it's a begrudging attraction. We understand that Oliver has tried to just put a crack in the door and Farley has allowed it. So this leads to a scene that happens shortly after, where Oliver, very upset, punches a mirror after singing that song in front of the entire party. But later that night, Farley wakes up to Oliver straddling him in his bed, and Oliver asks Farley if he's going to behave from now on.
These scenes are amazing.
Barry is putting in the work.
He is working. Daddy's working.
Daddy's working. You know, Farley says no, and Oliver begins touching Farley and asks again, don't make me ask again, fucking say it, I'm going to behave. So then we see Oliver spit on his hand, reach down, and Farley reach a climax. So, okay, these two be fucking now. Oliver's fucking everybody. Yeah.
Except Felix.
So the next morning, Oliver wakes up and sees that the mirror is now fixed. How did you take this? Like, do you think that he actually punched the mirror? I almost took it as the family glosses over anything that is out of place.
That's how I took it too, and the tendency for things to be covered up.
However, there's commotion downstairs of James and Elsbeth forcing Farley out, pushing him down the stairs, being like, you have to leave, you have to leave. And Venetia says it's because Farley nicked something. And because we have this context of Farley asking Felix for money, there's apparently proof that Farley sent out an email to someone trying to sell the Bellacy plates, which were these plates that James and Oliver were talking about earlier, like these artifacts, these very expensive things. The parents found out, and that's why Farley is dismissed, for lack of a better term.
Later that day, is it Felix, Venetia? Oh, no, it's just the rest of the family, right?
Yeah, so later it's Oliver, Venetia, and Felix talking about the situation, but then when the parents walk up, they stop talking about it, and then they find out that Pamela died.
And then Lady Elsbeth says she'd do anything for attention.
Oh my God.
Which is like, damn, but also very funny because it's so jarring. So as the summer ends, Elsbeth and James are continuing to plan the party for Oliver's birthday. And Felix surprises Oliver with a trip somewhere that's a surprise. As they drive through the countryside, blasting Mr. Brightside by the Killers, we see Oliver become more and more apprehensive, especially when he sees a familiar traffic sign. And he realizes that Felix is taking him to see his parents.
Or his mother.
Or his mother, yes, because his father has passed away. So Oliver is immediately apprehensive. He says, please don't do this. Please don't do this. But Felix insists, she's your mother. You have to have a relationship with her. She called your phone and I picked up. She was asking for your address so she could send you a birthday card. And he is convinced that he is doing the right thing by forcing Oliver to see his mother. However, when they arrive at Oliver's mother's address, Felix looks a little bit surprised at what he sees. It's just your regular suburban home. There's a beautiful garden, a manicured lawn. We can tell that this home is really taken well care of. Felix even notes it seems like she's doing really well for herself. Like maybe she's really turned it around this time. But when they knock on the door, the woman who opens the door does not seem like somebody who is abusive or neglectful or incapable of, I don't know, managing this kind of house. She is like a regular looking woman. And that's not to say that she couldn't have her own substance abuse issues. But so far we're seeing that what Felix is observing is not matching up maybe the story that he has heard from Oliver or the story that he has imagined based on the details Oliver has given him. So they go inside, have a seat, and guess who the fuck joins the party?
Daddy!
Oliver's father is alive and well and sitting in the living room with Felix and Oliver. And there's even dialogue that mentions Oliver's sister. And we can see Felix is pissed. Obviously, he knows Oliver has lied to him in some serious ways. But I love the way Felix handled this. Like at one point, Oliver's mother says that she made lunch and Oliver says that he doesn't want to stay. But Felix is like, no, we'll stay. I love spag bowl. Do you know what that is?
No.
Spaghetti bolognese. I love spag bowl. It's like, oh man, he's going to stay and make you sit in the shit that you stirred. And I love that reaction.
The drive home is silent. And we see Oliver then chasing Felix throughout Saltburn. Felix is like, listen, after this party, it's best that you go home. You're a fucking liar. Oliver said, I just wanted to be your friend. Please don't tell your family. And Felix is like, that's what you're fucking worried about, and storms off. So we see Oliver sobbing in his bed and suiting up for his Midsummer Night Dreams party, which is now in full swing. Oliver enters. It's like buckhorns that he's wearing, right?
Yes.
Antlers and a blazer that has nothing on underneath. He's looking very great. He's looking for Felix and finds Felix in the bathroom doing drugs with some other people. But Felix is like, I don't want to talk to you. Fuck off. This is your party, but this is the last time I'm going to see you. Like, get the fuck out of here. Farley ends up jump scaring Oliver outside.
That's right. He's dressed as a donkey.
Which just makes me think of Shrek, but I'm sure there's another element of significance there.
I think there's a donkey in Midsummer Night's Dream. I think somebody gets turned into a donkey. I can't remember. But also I thought it was interesting because like another name for a donkey is an ass, and Farley's dressed up as the ass.
Yes, exactly. But Farley taunts Oliver and reveals like, hey, I was invited. Right now you're having this golden summer, but you don't get it back. You're going to catch a train back to the doll factory that they make Oliver's in.
Oh my God, he's so mean.
And I get to come back here because this isn't a dream to me. It's my house. So whatever happens, I always come back. Try harder next time, baby. I love this. Because at this point, like we really have seen that anyone who gets dismissed goes away forever. But I think this is showing that the name will always be more important than the work that you've put in to have the company you keep. And I think Oliver's realizing that like he's fighting a losing battle right now. And I think this is notable because the crowd gathers around the stairway to sing happy birthday to him. But when it comes to the point where it's like happy birthday to Oliver, nobody knows his name.
Oh.
Like everyone's like, happy birthday to happy birthday to you. So it's making Oliver realize that he is not special.
This movie in some ways reminds me of The Great Gatsby. Mm-hmm. Just some of the themes of like these big illustrious parties, but there's a lack of intimacy, like real intimacy there. You know, the lives of the rich versus the lives of those without such financial support. This is just like an English version from 2024. I kind of like it. But not to celebrate The Great Gatsby, because The Great Gatsby is, I think, overrated in a lot of ways. So that's another conversation. So Oliver is drunk and he is desperate to talk to Felix, who is continuing to give him the cold shoulder. He follows Felix into the shrub maze where Felix has just led India, who is a girl he knows from college who is visiting the Saltburn estate for the party. And he comes across Felix and India having sex next to this large statue of the Minotaur, which is a figure, a half bull, half human figure in mythology. Oliver interrupts the moment. Felix is like, what the fuck? India leaves the maze and Felix and Oliver have a confrontation. Oliver says, you're the only friend I ever had, Felix, okay? I mean, doesn't this just prove how much of a good friend I actually am? How well I actually know you? I'm still the same person, yeah? I'm still the same person. So he's trying to play it off like he made the decisions to lie to Felix to fuel the narrative that Felix already had in his head about Oliver. And so Oliver was just trying to fuel that image in order to be close to Felix and be the person Felix thought he was.
He even says, look, I gave you what you wanted, what everyone else does. Everyone puts on a show for Felix, so I'm sorry my performance wasn't good enough. And it's interesting because Felix responds, I don't know what you are, but I do know you make my fucking blood run cold, and pushes him away.
I mean, that is in direct contrast to what Venetia said about everyone in their family. It makes me sad.
It makes me sad because I feel like Oliver thought that at Felix's core, he was a cold-blooded person. He was just trying to be relatable by also being cold-blooded. But Felix was a good person the majority of the time. Did he always have the best communication skills when he like fell out of favor with people? Probably not, but he's also like a 22-year-old boy. So that like makes the most sense in the world. But Felix is somebody who does care about people and does care about the truth, does care about honesty, which is in direct contrast with what the rest of his family cares about. So in the pursuit to be in Felix's favor, he's become what Felix hates about his family. And it's just showing that if Oliver had been honest all along, they would have had a more genuine relationship. And looking at the relationship between these two, I found myself thinking a lot about Needy and Jennifer. I found myself thinking a lot about Jennifer's obsession for Needy to need her and wanting to be her number one and feeling threatened by Chip and all of these types of things. Like the very much gray area that exists between like, I just want to be your person. And where does that bleed into sexual desire? Where does that bleed into intimacy? Where does that bleed into romantic feelings? Like, we don't know. And again, it's kind of giving me Cannibal Power Hour a little bit. Like, are you trying to take in everything that this person can be? Like, do you want to become them? Do you want them inside of you? Is that sexual desire? Like, what exactly is it? Is it envy? We don't know. We kind of get some answers, but like not all of them.
If we go back to a conversation we had several episodes ago about gothic literary elements, there is something called the gothic doppelganger, or just like the presence of doppelgangers in gothic literature. We actually had a moment early on in the movie where I think it's Venetia tells a story about a doppelganger, like Percy Bysshe Shelley seeing his doppelganger before drowning later that day. And Felix says he's very disturbed by the story. He hates it. And so thinking about what you just said about the consuming these liquids, what is that for? I'm also pairing that with what you said early in this episode about the first time we see Felix and Oliver in a scene interacting together, Oliver is mirroring Felix's movements. So like that mirroring we see from Oliver, that consuming of those fluids from these people, it seems like, yes, it could be this like lust, this attraction, but it could be that desire to become them, to be part of that and play into that idea of the gothic doppelganger.
And you know what? As much as this movie was an unpleasant surprise for us both, it's giving a little bit of the Love Witch with these bottles.
Yes, the witch bottles.
The witch bottles. Yeah, the bodily fluids.
The Love Witch. Here we... Wild movie, but here it is.
So this interaction ends with Oliver shoving the bottle that he was carrying around. It was like a bottle of champagne into Felix's arms as he turns away to vomit. Felix ends up sitting in that moment uncomfortably. He's drinking the bottle, just trying to be like, I just want you to go away. And Oliver ends up walking away and leaving him by himself. And I'm like, this is giving both catfish and a breakup, where it's like, you are not who you said you were. This feels like a breakup. Like, the scene very much feels like an ending of a relationship.
So we cut to the next morning. Oliver wakes up to the sound of commotion. We can see through the camera shots that people are searching frantically around the grounds of the house and that Felix is missing. And as this search montage is going on, we get that voiceover from the beginning of the movie that returns and narrates as the search continues. It's Oliver's voice, and he continues, "You don't need to be told, do you? You already know. You're just turning the handle on a jack-in-the-box, just walking toward the end of the world, knowing that any second the ground is going to fall away. It was the end of everything." And at the end of that string of dialogue, we find Lady Elsbeth has entered into the maze and has found Felix's dead body at the center next to the Minotaur statue.
There's a nice aerial shot of the rest of the family running through the maze and finding Felix on the ground. James seems to be in deep denial while Farley and Venetia are sobbing. Elsbeth is in shock. Oliver is in shock. And then we see this interesting lunch scene as they all like carry on as if nothing is happening. We see Duncan crying as he's struggling to close the curtains, Venetia overpouring a glass of wine. There's like a red light that's cast over the room.
That's the red room that I thought of earlier with connection to the Mask of the Red Death. Yeah.
And I think this light is what causes the truth of their reactions to come out. Like as soon as this light is kind of washing over all of them, we see that Elspeth is gagging, Farley is crying, Venetia is chugging and crying, James is sobbing. Finally, Farley is like having an outburst, being like, are we just going to pretend like nothing fucking happened? Like he died? Like what the fuck is going on?
Oh yeah, because they're like trying to talk about lunch through their tears. Mm-hmm. They're like, great lunch, as they're sobbing into their food. And Farley even goes as far as to ask, what is he still doing here, pointing at Oliver?
But then Oliver calls Farley out for racking up lines with Felix the night before, which is not something that Oliver actually witnessed now that I realize it. However, Farley is probably guilty for supplying the drugs, and the way he's reacting makes it so that is probably the case. So James commands that Farley's room be searched, and Farley's like whimpering, no, no, no. So we could tell that he does have drugs on him. He commands Farley to get out, that he won't mention this to the police, but that's all he's ever going to get again. And no one else comments as he's dragged away out of the house for a second time.
Then we cut to Felix's funeral. We have the rock throwing ceremony that we were acquainted with towards the start of the movie. Now we see the Catton family standing on a bridge and throwing a rock with Felix's name into the river. They leave and we see Oliver standing alone. He is sobbing over Felix's grave as the rain pours on this very gray, sad day. He lowers himself onto the fresh dirt mound atop Felix's gravesite. And this is like, again, we are now at a scene that you've probably seen referenced several times, if not play out entirely on the internet. So we see Oliver crying, then kneeling back up on his knees to take off his shirt and laying back down and crying. And then we see him unbutton his pants, pull out his penis, and start having sex with the dirt. And it's like I said, I watched this a second time with my friend, and I was like, I love how this scene is so like, oh. And then it's like, oh. Okay. But there is a couple things about the scene. So first of all, the scene, I missed this in my research, but has since been confirmed. So Barry Keoghan improvised this, like the staging of this. Also, this scene was planned to be a reference to a very famous Gothic novel by Emily Bronte, where one of the primary characters literally digs up his lover's grave to lie with her corpse. So very much we're seeing those Gothic themes continued here.
I'm trying to understand what this is meaning to Oliver. Is this meant to be like a final exchange? Like if he is ejaculating into the dirt, that's kind of like Felix's bathtub. There's like this finality of the exchange. Is it like the latent desire that they never got to fuck? Is it a power move? I'm like topping you in this situation? Or is it just like a desperation to feel close to him again?
This moment does not feel maliciously motivated.
No.
Because he is sobbing and it seems like his pain is genuine. So I feel like your theories about this being more of an attempt to be close to Felix, maybe this is regret for how things went down. Or maybe it's like another thing, like he doesn't know how to deal with his grief. He doesn't know how to navigate those emotions. So this is just how he decides to do it.
So later, Oliver is back at the house with the family and he goes to like excuse himself. It seems to be like a natural ending to the end of the funeral dinner or luncheon. But Elspeth asks, you're not leaving us, are you? You're not leaving Saltburn? So then we kind of have an interesting mirroring scene with Venetia this time in the bathtub. And Oliver enters and, you know, tries to be like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize you were in here. And Venetia calls his politeness grating. Venetia says that I saw you weeping at the funeral and felt sorry for you, but then I remembered that you only knew him for 6 months. You have nothing to do with him, with us, with here, nothing at all. You're just a stranger, yet here you are right in the middle of it all. Stranger fucking danger. You know that our daddy started calling you Spider-Man? You're always just skulking around, weaving your spidery, Oliver-y web. Don't be upset, Ollie. I don't think you're a spider. I think you're a moth. Quiet, harmless, drawn to shiny things, batting up against the window, just desperate to get in. Well, you've done it now. You've made your holes in everything, and you'll eat us from the inside out.
That dialogue should win rewards.
Venetia ate. Oh my fucking God. Because I was upset that she wasn't really showing up besides being denied in this movie up until this moment. The intimacy or the vulnerability of her being drunk in a bathtub and causing this man so much of a bruise to his ego was so fucking powerful.
I love that. You're so right. Her being in such a vulnerable state, but still like totally pulling this power dialogue.
And Oliver's crying, like he keeps trying to excuse himself, but he keeps just getting battered by her words over and over again. She ends up smelling Felix's aftershave on his face, says, "You're a fucking freak. I bet you're wearing his underwear too. Yeah, you disgusting little nobody. You ate him right up and you licked the fucking plate." And then they start kissing.
Yeah, but then it stops. We could see Venetia's also confused, I think.
Yeah, she's lost.
Well, she's grieving. We saw her have an attraction towards Oliver. She's probably confused about what she's feeling.
Is the kiss a way for her to feel close to her brother? Is this latent admiration for her brother because the aftershave is on his face?
Well, I was wondering that because we do see a scene where Venetia is sitting on her brother's lap at one of the parties.
Yes.
And then we are watching her sitting naked in her brother's bathroom tub, which is kind of an interesting way to feel close.
Yeah.
Which, again, in the context of this movie, I think we could be asking those questions. But that's a really good point. She kisses him after smelling the aftershave, which is like, why in that order?
Yeah. But then we see a present Oliver, because we didn't establish this. A lot of the movie is taking place in flashback. Oliver is telling this story from a present perspective at bedside to somebody. And in the present, he says, "It broke her completely. She said it herself. She couldn't live without him." And then we get a shot of a bloody tub, Venetia dead in the tub, and Oliver discovering her. There's a shot of Duncan holding out two umbrellas, one for the parents and one for Oliver at her funeral, and Venetia's stone at the bottom of the river.
After Venetia's funeral, we get a scene where Sir James calls Oliver into his office and asks him to leave. But Oliver says no. He plans on staying as long as Lady Elsbeth will have him. And we can see Sir James becoming frustrated because he wants Oliver to leave. He says the family needs to grieve in quiet. But he ends up paying Oliver off to leave and never return. We don't see how much he cuts the check for, but we can assume based on editing that money is ultimately what gets Oliver to leave.
So life moves on for them both, and now we are cut forward to 2022, where Oliver is reading an obituary for James in the paper. Later, Oliver and Elsbeth end up running into each other in a cafe. Oliver apologizes after hearing the news of James, and Elsbeth notes how much Oliver has grown up. So again, kind of like reigniting that level of interest. Oliver asks about Saltburn, and Elsbeth says, "It's about the same, but I couldn't be there by myself. I bought a flat nearby," and ends up apologizing on behalf of James for his behavior. But Elsbeth ends up inviting Oliver to come up and stay at Saltburn now that the coast is clear. So present Oliver narrates how the few months have been the happiest of his life. "It's just a shame that you got so ill."
Oh my gosh.
Cut to Elsbeth on a fucking ventilator and Oliver blowing smoke from his cigarette into her face.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. We have entered plot twist.
He goes on to say, "It's been a pleasure looking after you, just as it'll be a pleasure looking after Saltburn." And we see flashbacks of Elsbeth signing Saltburn over to Oliver. And I don't know what informs this decision. Do you think they were having not an affair because they're both single, I guess, but like, do you think they were romantically involved? Do you think that Oliver just made himself appear as though he was like a son figure? Like, I can't tell what happened.
I was wondering if because she had no heirs, presumably, because, well, Farley is probably still not communicating with the family and then her two children are dead. Maybe she saw somewhat of a son figure in Oliver and that's what persuaded her to do it.
He goes on to say, "Is there really ever such a thing as an accident? I don't know. Accidents are for people like you, but for the rest of us, there's work. And unlike you, I actually know how to work." And there is a montage of Oliver flattening Felix's tire, pretending he was broke at the bar when Felix bought the shots for everybody, sending the email trying to sell the plates from Farley's phone, tracking down Elsbeth where she moved. We get a reprise of his monologue. "I wasn't in love with him. I know everyone thought I was, but I wasn't. I loved him. I loved him. I loved him. By God, I loved him. But sometimes I hated him. I hated him. I hated all of you. And you made it so easy. Spoiled dogs, sleeping belly up. No natural predators. Well, almost none." And then we see montages of Oliver poisoning the bottle that he shoved into Felix's arms, placing razors at Venetia's bath side. He then tears Elsbeth's breathing tube out violently and watches her struggle to breathe and eventually die as we see a fourth casket in the family plot. He kneels over her body and lays on her chest. There's like a somewhat funny but morbid scene where he keeps trying to drape her dead arm over him as if she's embracing him, but he's not. And then we get the infamous exterior, then interior shot of Saltburn where Murder on the Dance Floor plays and naked Barry Keoghan just flaunts his shit all over Saltburn, dancing the night away as we see the puppet box, which I guess we didn't bring up earlier.
Oliver has retrieved the river stones with the family's names on them and sets them above each person in the box.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like going back to what you observed earlier when Farley was saying all these comments to Oliver about being a puppet. Now it seems like Oliver has kind of like made the family members the puppets.
And that's the movie.
And that's the movie. So let's get into some of this like vampire conversation because we've been touching on it here and there as we went. So as previously mentioned, Emerald Fennell has been quoted saying Saltburn is a vampire film. She revealed, quote, "Certainly, metaphorically, it is a vampire film. It is about what we do when we're completely besotted with something or someone, and I hope it's part of the classic gothic tradition where love and hate are very, very close together." So an article from The Scotsman by David Hepburn summarizes this interview and some other vampire connections. So first, and maybe the most obvious, Oliver calls himself a vampire before he performs oral sex on Venetia. He says, "You're lucky I'm a vampire." And then, of course, he consumes her blood in the scene because she's on her period. Oliver also consumes other bodily fluids, aka Felix's cummy bathwater. And this one kind of blew my mind a little bit. Oliver is invited to Saltburn. And vampires need to be invited into spaces for them to do their evil business. Also, Oliver seems to be the most active at night. Vampires also have a hypnotic presence, and Oliver displays that. He seems to have powers of manipulation, like when he persuades Felix that he didn't have sex with Venetia, when he persuades Farley to quote-unquote behave, when he brings Elsbeth under his influence. So this might make Oliver more of an emotional vampire than a regular vampire. And if you don't know what an emotional vampire is, you should watch What We Do in the Shadows on Hulu, because it's so funny. And then finally, the grave scene. This one is probably the most metaphorical. So vampires, as we know, are like undead beings. They're not confined by death. So when Oliver has sex with the grave, it seems like he's maybe transcending death. He's not deterred by it when it comes to being with Felix in some capacity.
And it's almost as if, like, vampires aren't usually the type. Like, I'm thinking of Jennifer again from Jennifer's Body's Succubus. Like, it's all or nothing. Like, you're killing somebody, you're taking them for all they have. Where I'm thinking of Dracula, where people that are bitten, they're seduced over time, like they're fed on over time. You have to play with them a little bit. It's this natural idea of seduction of first you're waking up, realizing things are wrong, and then you're trying to convince yourself that what's happening isn't happening. And then all of a sudden you're like head over heels, like seduced by this person. We get to a point where it's been unsuccessful on almost everybody because everyone realizes what he is at some point. Farley realizes what he is. Felix realizes what he is. Venetia realizes what he is. And we see proof of that. But like Elsbeth, the lady of the house, is the only one that thinks he's good the entire time. So it's interesting how she's the last one standing because her seduction has been going on the longest and it's been the least amount of overt. Like she's never been his primary target, you know?
There are also some other references in this movie, specifically to, well, we talked about some literary references. There are other ones that I haven't touched on, but there's also some mythological references, specifically with the Minotaur. So I found a post on Reddit by user Hot and Understanding, which is the best username I've ever heard in my life. Hot and Understanding details some elements of the legend of the Minotaur first in a post, "An English Teacher Watches Saltburn." Quote, "The Minotaur was a monster created solely by the sin of his two parents and anger of the gods. After refusing to sacrifice a bull for Poseidon, Minos was punished through his wife Pasiphae being bewitched to fall in love with the bull, thus bearing the Minotaur." And the Minotaur, again, is like top half bull, bottom half man. And the Minotaur is this child of bestiality, viewed as a monster, but also as an innocent. So Hot and Understanding then goes on to theorize that Felix is an embodiment of the Minotaur since he is the one slain in the maze. And again, in the story of the Minotaur is famously condemned to live in the labyrinth, which is a maze. And we know in the center of this maze is a massive statue of the Minotaur. Quote, are Felix's parents not partially his creator in this sense? Do they not reinforce ideas of rich superiority, of brushing problems under the rug, of indulging themselves with playthings whenever they desire? I would argue that despite all this, Felix is still an innocent. Though moody, he is shown to be generous, considerate, and heartfelt. He is young and as much a victim as any other character in the film. The Minotaur's own sister, Ariadne, helps to bring his downfall. She helps lead the hero Theseus through the maze. Felix's sister, Venetia, has her own hang-ups. As evidenced by the story of Eddie from Summer Prior, she likes to pull attention from Felix wherever possible. In her introductory scene, her family and the camera characterize her as some sort of messy siren that Oliver will inevitably be pulled in by. She is seen to have awareness and agency and a deep longing for attention. By liking and being with Oliver, Venetia welcomes him into their world even more. She leads him through the maze, so to speak, and gives Oliver even more of an in than he already had. It upsets Felix to know that Venetia and Oliver were seen together. He feels betrayed. The Minotaur receives regular sacrifices of women. You know old Greece, the myth specifies virgins. Felix is portrayed as a real player. He gets with girls immediately and leaves them just as fast. We are made to feel sympathy for one particular girl at Oxford when he no-shows her. Theseus's whole purpose in slaying the Minotaur is to end these sacrifices. Oliver is obviously unwell, but doesn't it seem like he believes that there is some good, deeper reason for his friendship with Felix? Like he might finally get him to quit his player ways or at least help him see what he's doing? And it's subtle, but there is a statue of Theseus killing the Minotaur in the front of the house. You can see it in that scene with Rosamund Pike when she says the iconic line about being a lesbian once. Also, okay, so again, this theory I think is different from what I have seen most on the internet, which is the theory that Oliver is the Minotaur. And one of the biggest reasons that people theorize that Oliver is the Minotaur is because the statue has been quoted by the director of this movie as being built based on Barry Keoghan's body. So like, I think because the Minotaur resembles Barry Keoghan, people think that Oliver is meant to be the Minotaur. But I think that the theories that at least maybe he starts as the Minotaur, but Felix turns into the Minotaur, I think are definitely valid and intentional. Going back to Theseus, who is again the hero who slays the Minotaur, Theseus is also a prevalent character in the William Shakespeare play A Midsummer Night's Dream. And if we remember, that is the theme of Oliver's birthday party. So in a Screen Rant article, 10 Hidden Details and References in Saltburn, the article reads, quote, Ollie's birthday party at Saltburn is aesthetically themed to William Shakespeare's famous comedy, A Midsummer Night's Dream. The deer antlers that Ollie wears is a reference to the changeling boy at the center of the Shakespeare play before his darker side transforms him into the Minotaur, that is. Other references to Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream include the costumes of Queen Titania, who Elsbeth is dressed up as, and Duke Theseus, who Sir James dresses as in a suit of armor. So my thoughts. Okay, so again, many people read Oliver as an embodiment of the Minotaur because of the statue being crafted in the actor's image. But I think that there is a switch. I think Felix's death marks a switch. Oliver is supposed to be the innocent born into the unhappy life and imprisoned by society character, but that is just a facade that he puts on that we learn as the movie continues. Felix, maybe being too trusting, may be a better embodiment of Icarus. And Icarus is a figure in mythology who flew too close to the sun with his wax wings. The wings melted and sent him plummeting to his death. And we see Felix dressed up as like an Icarus character at the party. I like the idea that both Felix and Oliver have connections to the Minotaur lore. Oliver and Felix's switching place in the Minotaur symbolism, I think, foreshadows the switch that takes place in the ownership of Saltburn. And this switch happening at the Midsummer Night's Dream theme party is significant not only because Theseus is a character in both the play and Minotaur lore, but also because Midsummer Night's Dream has a famous play within a play scene, which I think symbolizes the levels of theater in Oliver's manipulation. It's like, here's what I'm showing to this person, but also here's what's really happening behind the scenes. Also, I think it's interesting that Oliver's father is dressed up as Theseus, who is supposed to be the hero, but we don't actually see him end up protecting anybody.
I mean, for a time, he does banish him from Saltburn for a time.
True.
Like, he's the one who gets him to actually leave.
Just in financially.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely, yes. So again, at first it appears that Oliver is honest and loves Felix, but then it appears that he lied to give Felix what he wants because he loves him. And then it comes out at the end that he hates Felix and plans to take Saltburn all along.
A big thing that I was always curious about was Oliver privy to the point that Felix was of Saltburn upon seeing him for the first time? Is the motivation to become Felix? Is the motivation to be Felix's friend? Is the motivation to take over Saltburn? Like, does he have knowledge of Saltburn prior to Felix inviting him to Saltburn? Or is it to embody the kind of person that Felix is, and Saltburn just comes with being who Felix is? I understand perhaps the motivation once he knows what Saltburn is, that he wants that level of wealth, or he wants that level of, you know, high-flying consumption, whatever it is. And you're marking this switch here. Like, is the motivation to become Felix? And if that's the case, if that switch occurs, like, is that the actual transition of when that happens? Like, him becoming the son?
Yeah, or at least foreshadowing that that switch is going to, like, financially happen down the line.
Yeah.
I'm also wondering, too, like, you had said something earlier that made me wonder this. Were Oliver's intentions always the same? Like, I think at the end, we're led to believe that he always planned to take Saltburn. Mm-hmm. But was it love in the beginning? Mm-hmm. Like, did he think, I am infatuated with this peer, I want to get to know him? Maybe his first plan of attack is to be his friend and become ingratiated in the family. But then was being with the family something that ended up corrupting him or corrupting his methods of consumption?
Well, I'm thinking about that monologue at the end, too, where it's like, oh, you spoiled dogs belly up with no natural predators. And the fact that he went into the maze with the poison champagne bottle was a failsafe if Felix hadn't wanted to reconcile with him.
Yes. So what if Felix wanted to reconcile with him?
Yeah, like, what would the ending be if that was the case?
Maybe he hates Felix so much because Felix, in the end, did not comply with him. He felt he had to kill him to save himself, but he resents having to kill him because he loved him, hence the love and hate simultaneously.
Yeah, he just wanted a level of ownership. And if, again, it's like the abusive dialogue of, if I can't have you, nobody will have you. Mm. Like, you will not admire somebody else in the way that you used to admire me. You will just admire nobody. If I don't get to be loved by you, nobody gets to be loved by you.
Ugh. What are your final thoughts on this movie?
I like it. I think that it has a lot of interesting things going on. I'm glad that the girlies got to see Barry Keoghan and Jacob Elordi be shirtless and touch each other. Like, that just seems to be like what a lot of people are taking away from it. But it felt spoon-fed. It had to try to give us answers for everything, and I almost wish it didn't. Mm. Because it takes away a lot of the interpretation. Even him having this dialogue, this monologue of, did I love him? Was I in love with him? Like, if you had taken that away, there would be more to talk about. Mm. But because we have so much dialogue coming from Oliver, we have so many misplaced motivations, it almost seems as though there's more contradictions than there are ways to interpret the film. That's not to say that it's bad, and that's not to say that I didn't like it, because I think that there's a lot of things you can pick apart and there's things to talk about all day. But I think I would have been happier with a little more gray area, honestly.
Mm.
Like, I would have been happier with a little less of the dialogue that kind of just tries to lay out how he was a supervillain the entire time. And I think there are scenes here that are interesting, that can be picked apart. And I feel like it's getting some due attention. It's a beautifully shot film. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I wish I had a little bit more room with the rest of the characters to breathe. Or if you were going to make it focused on Oliver, then, like, give us more or give us less. I don't know. I found myself being like, it was fine.
Yeah. I agree with you. It was beautiful to watch. I think there were a lot of really neat creative choices that went into it. The acting was astounding. Everybody showed up to work. Okay, 100%. This reminded me a lot of The Talented Mr. Ripley, which I really, really love. It was like one of the first sort of psychological thriller type movies I saw, so I felt proud of myself for having seen it, and so I hold it in high regard. So it's not like this movie is necessarily doing, I guess, a storyline that hasn't been done before. We know specifically the director references, I'm using references to this, this, and this. So I love that it's sort of like a mosaic of these really neat moments in literature and film. But yeah, that's an interesting point about the gray area. Like, what would it have been like if we got less storyline? Would our conjecture feel more fun to consider? Would there be less contradictions and more theories? I think that that could definitely be the case. But either way, I have to say the movie soundtrack has become a permanent part of my personality for the last 2 weeks. And I don't really see that going away anytime soon. And I envy all the people in Australia who get to have a Saltburn summer, because imagine what this shit would have been like if it hit in July for us.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You're very right.
I'm going to keep the party going until July, though. I will have my Saltburn summer. So that is that. We hope you enjoyed Saltburn. Again, we know it's a little bit different than what we usually cover. But we like to take requests. And if you have requests for us in the future, feel free to email us at thehorrorspodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us and contact us on Instagram at thehorrorspodcast.
And until next time, we're the horrors.
Bye.
Bye.